Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and how could we really get through a week here without a little MAGA Republican hypocrisy right here in Michigan? You know how congressional MAGA Republicans are studiously and feverishly working on their MAGA murder budget right now, so that way they can gash the working class safety net and then give handouts to their rich, elitist corporate donor base like Betsy DeVos and Elon Musk? Yeah, well, one of the parts MAGA Republicans want to enact as part of their MAGA murder budget is the cutting of some $700 to $800 billion from Medicaid. You know, that little program that helps give basic health insurance to some 2.5 million adults and children here in Michigan. Well, the U.S. House and Senate MAGA Republicans are busy trying to insert onerous and wasteful work requirements in order for some working class Americans out there to collect Medicaid and also some food stamp benefits. And this week, Michigan MAGA House Speaker Matt Hall skedaddled out of the state this week to pay a visit to Dear Leader's people in Washington, D.C. Now, wait a second. We're running against the clock here, all right? Tick-tock. We are running against the clock here on getting a state budget done by July 1st. And certainly, Matt Hall and the MAGA Republican House here, they all want to work on ensuring on getting that budget done for the people, right? I mean, the whole purpose of being state representatives is to pass bills, budgets, and communicate with the people. I mean, I thought that's what we call working, if I'm not mistaken. While Matt Hall has different ideas on what the word work means, since he and 40 other MAGA Michigan Republicans took a little trip down to Washington, D.C. this week, and they had to bow their heads and declare their loyalty to the Dear Leader regime. Apparently, Hall and the Republicans met with various Trump regime officials and came to the conclusion that what America really needs, the working class, what it really needs is the MAGA murder budget. According to Bridge Magazine, Hall declared, "I'm not convinced that the Whitmer administration is doing all of the proper checks that are needed to ensure that only eligible people are receiving welfare programs, whether it's food stamps, whether it's Medicaid, whether it's cash assistance." So you see, these guys, like Matt Hall and MAGA Republicans and white Christian nationalists like them, they have nothing but pure contempt for the working class in the state. And you know that because at one point they will declare that the economy is so awful. It was so bad. We had to put Dear Leader Trump into office because Biden just completely wrecked this economy. But then at the flip of a coin, they'll blame working people for not doing better. It's quite the game. They want wasteful, and I call it wasteful, work requirements to belittle working class people even more because MAGA Republicans only aspire to be like their corporate donors. They despise and they detest the working class. They detest working class Michiganders. If I may, I'd like to play this little part from Little Matt's speech when he came back from Washington, D.C. here this week because it struck me with another MAGA hypocritical moment. Listen.
You see our efforts to get pop and other sugary drinks out of the SNAP program, the food stamp program. I mean, it's fine if people want to, you know, I drink Diet Pepsi sometimes at the press conferences. But, you know, if the government is paying for this, the taxpayer through food stamps, we want to make sure it's healthy and we want to make sure it's healthier than the things that people are doing now.
Now, I kind of remember how these little authoritarians like Matt Hall were losing their freaking minds when former First Lady Michelle Obama was trying to simply promote healthy eating at schools for all kids. Trust me, I remember working in right-wing talk radio back then when so many people, either right-wing hosts or their listeners, would say that this was the first step. What Michelle Obama was doing was the first step towards communism, and that the kids should be allowed to pound shakes and eat Lunchables at their heart's desires. That's America. And now, today, here's Matt Hall lamenting how some people on food stamps may spend a little money on pop, even diet pop. And he wants to shame working people by ordering them what they can or cannot eat or drink with their food stamps. He loves that power over working people. But here's something I'm sure Matt Hall hasn't thought about, which, as we know, thinking is anathema to MAGA. But Matt, my boy, listen up. We pay your salary. We Michiganders pay your salary, clown. And so maybe I might want a law outlawing how you can drink pop on the money that I give you. And same with your little work requirement change. You sit there and lecture the working class. You lecture working class Michiganders on how they must work for their Medicaid. They must work for their SNAP benefits. Yet, hey, as far as I know sometimes here, bud, you're not working. And you've enjoyed how many days off? I mean, we didn't even have the legislature, at least in the state house, in session at all this week. Why? Because you had to go down to Washington, D.C. Hard work. Give me a break, Matt Hall. You don't understand hard work. And if you did, you wouldn't be selling out the working class as you normally do. I mean, we know the numbers. Over 60% of Americans on Medicaid already work, with others looking for jobs or being caretakers or more. Yeah, and by the way, this work requirement, it really goes after working women as well, like caretakers. And not only are MAGA Republicans putting a strain on states by gutting federal Medicaid funding, but in Michigan, work requirements will then cost an extra $75 million in administrative costs. $75 million! And that will also leave possibly over 390,000 Michiganders without health coverage. That's what these work requirements do. You see, MAGA Republicans are all talk when they say they're about the working class, but then there's Matt Hall and his merry band of little fascist Trump regime loyalists wasting our time visiting his dear leader's people while whining and dining with Washington elites, the people who pay for his time. See, those on Medicaid, they don't get that kind of time with Matt Hall. Only the elites get that time with Matt Hall. And yet, these are the same buffoons who refuse to show up at town halls because they know how insanely unpopular their MAGA murder budget really is and how insanely unpopular here in Michigan that Matt Hall's education budget really is. But hey, Matt Hall's got a brand new color picture for the state capitol. I mean, that's what he wanted to talk about once he got back from D.C. Here's his brand new color picture with his big mug right there for everyone to see. Now, that's called work, I'm told. That's working, right, Matt Hall? Who says he's not working hard like us? Coming up here in a moment, progressive Democratic State Representative Kerry Rangans from State House District 47 will join me to talk about what's happening in Matt Hall's MAGA State House, what she's doing to show that some Democrats are fighting for the well-being of the working class here in Michigan, including her reintroduction of her Medicare for All program called MyCare. Now, you see, Representative Rangans is doing something that more Democrats ought to be doing in this era of the Trump regime, authoritarianism, and elitism. She's playing offense. And I say that because this line stuck out to me in a recent Bridge, Michigan story from Simon D. Schuster, in which he quotes Democratic State Representative and friend of the show, Jason Morgan of Ann Arbor, right next door to Kerry Rangans' district. And this quote from Representative Morgan really spoke volumes to me. In the story, this is what he said, and I quote, "I don't think you can evaluate Michigan Democrats as a collective right now. I think you see some Democrats out there fighting hard on every front all the time, everywhere, in all the ways. And you have others who are being quieter and not fighting that hard." So Representative Morgan illustrated the inner struggle that's happening inside the Democratic Party right now on both the state and national level, something that I've talked about a lot here, because as we've witnessed this last week with the No Kings rallies across the state and across the nation. Millions and millions of people are banding together to show their opposition to this authoritarian Trump regime and also show their opposition to those in the MAGA Republican Party who celebrate this brand of authoritarianism. Some 70-plus No Kings events took place across the state, and except for some motorcycle gang slash MAGA types who tried to instigate a fight at Clark Park in Detroit, it was relatively a peaceful day. Thanks to local chapters of Indivisible, which promotes a different path, a progressive path towards building back our working class and our democracy, and also groups like the 50 Protests, 50 States, and One Nation, or our good progressive friends at Distilled Social, and countless of other local and state activists, the people churned out in a show of nonviolent force against fascism. That is what we saw happen across Michigan and everywhere else this past weekend. And let me read this little part here from the Michigan Progressive Activist Heroines, known as Distilled Social. And this is what they wrote on their Substack about what we saw in Michigan last weekend. Quote, "If you're wondering whether these protests really matter, here's your stat of the day. When just 3.5% of the population engages in sustained nonviolent resistance, change is not just likely, it's inevitable." And that source comes from Harvard professor Erica Chenoweth. And as Distilled Social says, yes, we are nerds for knowing that. But even more, I like what they said next here. They said, we are damn close. Yes, that 3.5% marker wasn't met last weekend, but it was damn close. Now, here's what I noticed from the various reports and social media posts out there. Some Democrats showed up for the protests, like Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. She showed up, as she always does for her Detroit residents. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell showed up. Congresswoman Haley Stevens, if she did show up, I'm not sure. So please, if she did show up at a No Kings event, please let me know. I don't want to say that she didn't show up if she actually did. So I'm not going to say that, but I'm not seeing any stories out there that she did. But as Simon D. Schuster noted in that Bridge, Michigan story that I just mentioned, notably absent from any of those No Kings rallies was Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Now, I'm actually not going to criticize Whitmer for not attending this kind of a rally, especially after the assassination of a former Minnesota Democratic official in Minnesota on the same day that these rallies were happening. But let's be fair. Let's be fair, everyone. Big Gretch hasn't been the most vocal opponent of the Trump regime since it regained power. Yes, I know that she has voiced her opposition to the MAGA murder budget, but while millions took to the streets, I think a lot of people would have liked to have known that Governor Whitmer was listening to them. And I think it would have maybe behooved her to want to show up at a couple of different rallies. Instead, Whitmer took off for a trade mission. And this fight against fascism, everyone, this fight isn't a superficial fight. And it's not just about fashion. And it's not just about being cool. No. As we're seeing with people being ripped away from their lives and their families off the streets here in the United States of America, as we're watching in clear view how MAGA Republicans will end up literally killing thousands by gutting Medicaid services and defunding local hospitals, including rural hospitals, as millions watch the corporate oligarchy gain more power under this regime, as corruption runs rampant and unblocked by our MAGA Republican government. With all of this happening, it's time for people to be held to account. And it's time for those to say, this is un-American, and it will stop under my watch under the name of democracy. You can't argue that you are against this regime and then turn around and okay the regime's nominees or some of its bills, like when Michigan Senators Alyssa Slotkin and Gary Peters voted to confirm Kristi Noem as Homeland Security Secretary. How many out there in my state and around the nation believe that that was a wise vote? Especially after last week when Noem proclaimed that the regime that she works for was busy working on liberating Los Angeles from the Democrats that voters there elected to lead them. You see, that's authoritarianism. That's authoritarianism right there saying democracy is not their favorite brand. They believe in fascism. Look, you're either fully against authoritarianism or you're not. I keep saying that week after week after week. You're either for it or you're not. There's no middle ground here, everybody. There's no bipartisan way of fighting this. There's no nonpartisan way of fighting this. You're either for authoritarianism or you are against it. We know where MAGA Republicans will fall in this entire fight, but where will Democrats fall on this position? You're listening to LOL.
This isn't a conservative podcast. We actually believe in freedom here, and we don't lose sleep over solar panels either. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, we're on YouTube now. Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever else you get your podcasts. Tell Pat what you think of the show by contacting him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to the show with Pat Johnston.
If there's anything you believe I got wrong or that I missed or that I'm missing, or if you have ideas for a future topic or potential guest, let me know at leftoflansing@gmail.com. And if you'd just like to leave me a general comment on the show or the state of politics in Michigan and the nation, or you want to talk about Tigers baseball or talk about the best movies from the 80s or the 90s, just email me leftoflansing@gmail.com. Okay. Now, I'm thrilled to have this guest join us here for the third time, because with what I talked about is going down in Lansing in terms of the budgets and the education budget with Republicans in control of the state house, and with what I talked about in regards to the state of politics everywhere, I think it's great timing that progressive Democratic State Representative Carrie Reingans decided to join the show here this week. Representative Reingans is from State House District 47, and that includes Washtenaw and Jackson counties, where she won her last race by garnering around 60% of the vote. She's a staunch advocate for the working class, and she's a staunch advocate for Medicare for all in Michigan, which we will talk about in a little bit as well. Representative Reingans, thanks so much for taking a little time out here to join us on Left of Lansing.
Thank you so much for having me back on. I'm excited to talk about all things politics in Michigan.
Look, I know there's lots that we've got to talk about, but I have to get your reaction on what happened in Minnesota over the weekend, where we learned that a politically motivated murder and assassination happened as a man posing as a police officer killed former Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark, and then also shot State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette, who are alive still. On top of that, authorities reported how there was a list of around 70 other targets in the killer's car, and as NBC News and the BBC reported, names also included possible targets in Michigan. And those names included, according to Michigan Advance, included Congresswoman Hillary Scholten from Grand Rapids, Rashida Tlaib of Detroit, and Debbie Dingell of Ann Arbor. Now, we saw firsthand here, Representative, in the state of Michigan, how right-wing terrorism led to the planned kidnapping of Governor Whitmer a few years ago. So I was just wondering, since I've got you here, can I get your reaction on what happened in Minnesota? And also, can I get your reaction to some MAGA influencers, as well as some prominent Republican politicians who tried their best to portray this assassin as some kind of progressive Democrat when all of the evidence so far suggests otherwise?
Thanks for asking about this. It is a scary time to be an elected Democrat in Trump's America. And I will say there is still some details coming out. So what you have stated so far is the details that have been confirmed by multiple news sources. I have participated in multiple security briefings with multiple levels of law enforcement, and we're still confirming some details as well. The first thing folks should know is that politically motivated violence is wrong. In our country, we were founded on the ideals of debating our differences and deciding them at the ballot box, through policy debates, through the courts. We as a nation were founded to be able to protect those ideals and those freedoms and have that be the way that we solve our problems, not through violence. So this violence is wrong. The violence that we've seen with the assassination attempts against President Trump is also wrong. Mm-hmm. Violence targeting elected officials because of disagreements on policy is wrong. We are still awaiting confirmation about what the motive was for this particular set of shootings. You know, that's why I'm a little bit hesitant to condemn this necessarily being right-wingers, because it were that kind of violence. We have seen a pattern of violence like that from a certain section of society, but it is wrong. And it should not happen. This is not the way we solve our policy differences in the United States of America. It should not be, and it cannot be. We need our elected officials to be able to serve the people and interact with people without fear of violence for us just doing our jobs.
You're right, because it is sad what's happening in social media circles and all that, like I mentioned, because as far as Minnesota goes, from what I've seen, both Democrats and Republicans have expressed the same amount of sadness and outrage there. So it does show that the outrage over this crosses the political spectrum.
Well, and I will say, I'm a House member here in Michigan, in our Michigan House, and the official Instagram account of the Michigan House Republicans did post a statement that is offering thoughts and prayers for the families in Minnesota. I didn't see that on any other social media yet. And there are individual Republican caucus members making various statements. And then, of course, Democratic caucus members in the House condemning and offering thoughts and prayers. So I do think that there's an acknowledgement that this type of violence affects people across a political spectrum, and it isn't only targeted at Democrats or only targeted at Republicans. This is something that, you know, I think as a person trained in social work, I think there's a lot of coping skills that we should be able to work on with our society members so that when you have extreme reaction or extreme emotional reaction to some sort of vote happening or policy happening, that you're able to cope with that in a way that doesn't resort to picking up easily accessible firearm and using that to settle your policy problem. That is not how things should be done here. And people need to build up their coping skills so that they're not resorting to picking up firearms and using that to cope with their reaction, their emotional reaction to things that they might not like.
Of course, those murders happened on the same day as the No Kings rallies happened all across the nation and at more than some 70 places across Michigan. I noticed on your social media that you attended one of those rallies. Where were you and what did you see at that rally that helped inspire you some more?
Actually attended four.
Oh, you were at four. Nice, nice.
Yes, I was at four. I attended morning event in Manchester, which is in my district. It's a small city of about 2,000 residents. They had information tables in a park, and they were doing some education around Flag Day itself and what's in our Constitution and providing information to community members. And it was really like a happy picnic kind of atmosphere. And then I attended Chelsea, Michigan, had a rally, and this was also in a park. There were hundreds of people there. I had spoken at the Hands Off rally in April, and there were more people at this No Kings rally. It was mostly a happy, upbeat environment, and I had been waiting beside the gazebo to speak when I got the news that Speaker Emerita Hortman from Minnesota had actually succumbed to her gunshot wounds, as had her husband, Mark. And as I was standing there reading that, I was scanning the crowd, wondering who might have handguns that could reach me from a close range. And then I was scanning the homes across the street to see who might have window shades open, aiming at the gazebo. And I started feeling very scared. But the fact is that as scared as we might be, we still need to take action. And so when I spoke, I ended up tossing out my speech and saying that we can be scared right now. And there's reasons for us to be scared. It's not, we shouldn't ignore our feelings. And we need to continue taking action to protect our country. None of the rights and freedoms we have and that we enjoy in our country were won because the people with power just decided to give up some power. We always have to take action to demand that power. And so I got up, I spoke, said I was scared, but said, you know what we need to do is get through this together. And some of the people acting in oppressive ways don't want us to have joy, don't want us to have community. And we're going to say, absolutely not. Right now, we're going to sing a song together, Lean On Me, and the crowd sang along with my horrible singing. And I actually felt a lot better afterward with that crowd in Chelsea. So the power of community is really strong to help us get through this. I left there and went to Jackson, and the biggest protest they've had there in the community for a long, long time happened. And it was peaceful. People were chanting. It was a really good atmosphere. And then I went to the Ann Arbor rally that afternoon. I mean, multiple streets had to be shut down to accommodate the number of people. Overall, I mean, thousands and thousands of people in Michigan came out to these very peaceful rallies. And during one of the security briefings I had over the weekend with other state legislators, I was thrilled to hear the state police report that there were zero arrests across the entire state of Michigan related to these No Kings protests. So good job, everybody who was out there heeding the call to be peaceful peacefully protesting and peacefully assembling like our First Amendment protects us the right to do here in the United States. And that's a freedom worth fighting for.
And I think that was maybe the overarching message, the overarching theme was freedom is worth fighting for. That's what we were seeing at a lot of these rallies. And that goal was achieved. I mean, it showed solidarity that a large group of Michiganders and a large group of Americans are against the overall direction of the country. And judging how many millions did show up last weekend compared to the birthday parade in D.C., that goal, I think, was obviously achieved. But I think another inspiring part about what we saw happen at a lot of these rallies, it's that we saw just regular Americans volunteer their time in ways that maybe we haven't seen in a long time. And it wasn't just from some big group, you know, that usually would put on rallies such as this, demonstrations such as this, is that we are seeing just people organizing, we are seeing people communicating, we are seeing people messaging together. And as you put it just a few moments ago here, the power of community. That was quite evident for everyone to see in a way that maybe I can't even say we were seeing even back during the first term of Trump. And that's why we saw so many rallies sprout up in not just large cities or large towns, but we saw it also happening in smaller rural areas.
Yeah, well, I actually do find a lot of inspiration in the people who are volunteering their time. And I know you mentioned that a lot of the smaller towns were especially volunteer driven, but you should make sure you remember Indivisible here in Michigan, the 50-51 leadership, mm-hmm. those are all volunteers too. Yeah. Many of them have day jobs that are nothing related at all to politics, and they are volunteering their time to create these really large events in Lansing, Detroit, Grand Rapids. Some partner organizations do have employed organizers that help support in some ways. But the marshals that are at these events, people raise their hand and volunteer to get additional training for de-escalation and to put their bodies between would-be instigators and agitators and the peaceful assembling crowd. There was some agitation in Detroit, but the volunteer marshals de-escalated that exactly how we were hoping that would happen. Mm-hmm. And there ended up being no arrests. So I do think that volunteers and organizers and community members are joining arms hand in hand together to say, you know, we are going to work together. We are going to keep our people safe and we are going to show our dissent. I've said it before and I'll continue saying it right now. There are two sides. You are with President Trump and the fascist movement and the authoritarian movement, or you're not. You're a dissident. If you are not with this encroaching authoritarianism, then you are on the right side of history. And there's way more of us that are on the right side of history. And we need to remember that. And we need to work together to make sure that we go in our direction and protect our Constitution and protect our people and keep our country intact.
All great points. I read in an article back in April with the Manchester Mirror where you asked some voters that you were talking with then to remain engaged and to remain mobilized. And then you said something and it caught me. And I'm going to quote it here because I'll just quote it here first, then I'll ask my question. You said, "How is this going to end? I do think that there will be a conflict point where there will be either U.S. National Guard or active duty perpetrating violence on American citizens in a direct way. And that's when we have our National Guard looking at the crowds." I know you were hoping probably to be wrong a couple of months ago, but it appears that you were right on two fronts. One, that the National Guard would eventually be called somewhere. But two, that crowds, big crowds like we saw over the weekend, they make a difference. What made you feel like we would be down this path? And did you think it would be this fast?
What made me think that we might end up going down this path is because this is a playbook that is employed by authoritarians across the globe. And the only way that our country remains a republic, maintains our constitution, is if we, the people, are the ones that force that to happen by showing through large crowds, through our community building, that we in fact do want this republic. We do want to keep this republic and we do want to keep our constitution. And I'm sure you've heard, and it's been filtering through social media, this so-called 3.5% rule that any regime in the past approximate century that has had 3.5% of its population show up in the streets and resist has never failed. Now, of course, this is a retrospective study that has been done. I just heard an interview with the author Chenoweth about this. And she was saying this was using data from 2006 and before, for about a century before. And none of those organizers who were organizing against their regimes was thinking that they needed to just get to 3.5%. So those organizers just knew that they had to have a show of community and a show of people saying, standing up and protecting their own constitutions. So now that we know that, are we trying to set a goal and are we just going to stop at that goal, or do we blow through it? And I think we need to continue assembling, using our free speech rights, peaceful assembly rights, and our First Amendment protected redress of grievances to the government rights. You know, if we have problems, we are constitutionally protected to express those concerns with our government. Again, not through force, not through firearms, but through the channels that exist. They exist for those reasons, to help make sure that our constituents can contact us. So this is a playbook that has been played out across the globe, and we can learn from the past. I was a German studies major in college. I constantly keep in the back of my mind my concern about the weaponization of the Reichstag fire. There was a fire in the Capitol building in Berlin, and then Chancellor Hitler used it as an excuse to say that somebody was attacking the country, and then they suspended the Constitution and did some other things. All that happened within 90 days. So I was really wondering how fast it would happen here. And it actually took longer than I thought for National Guard to be deployed. Thankfully, the National Guard has not been as violent as it possibly could have been. And the active duty Marines that have been deployed have not been violent to our people as it could be possible in the future. And I hope it stays that way. I hope that we don't need the National Guard or the deployed Marines in LA. I hope we don't need those to be happening in any other state, in any other city. We are not being invaded. We are not having the types of parameters that are listed for the deployment of these things, for the invocation of the Insurrection Act. We're not being invaded by a foreign country right now that's under the direction of their government invading us.
Yeah. And Representative, I just want to second everything you said. I'm with you. I hoped I was going to be wrong, but I feared that we would see these kinds of actions earlier rather than later. And well, the Trump regime did not prove me wrong there. All right. Well, let's focus a little bit more here on what's happening in Michigan, because last week, House Republicans are working on the general budget, but they also passed their education budget, in which they somewhat backed off from their original proposals to dramatically cut funding to the University of Michigan and Michigan State University. But cuts still remain in those budgets, including language that threatens to further cut universities if they continue with DEI policies or allow transgender girls to play in sports and more. And while Republicans backed off on their original cutting plan, it appears to me that they're still using the funding mechanisms to promote their, and I mean promote their, political agenda on state universities. Do I have that wrong? Please say I do.
So the way that a budget bill works is there is text in the bill that describes how many dollars go to which things. And then there's text in the bill called boilerplate that describes how funding may be used, or penalties may be assessed, or incentives may be offered. That boilerplate language is where you're talking about, where these political policies like banning transgender girls from playing sports or banning DEI, which unfortunately, even the chairperson of the higher education budget, when asked by a committee member to define what DEI was, he actually could not, which is really unfortunate that we're legislating things that you can't even define.
Right.
Those boilerplate items remained. The terrible boilerplate items did remain in the bill that was passed with almost every Republican vote. I think a bigger story is that the Republicans in the House in Michigan actually couldn't get all their members on board with this terrible budget. And we were there until 11 o'clock on Thursday to pass this terrible budget. And it was because the Republicans could not collaborate amongst themselves to get all the votes they needed. And so I do think that there's some members on the Republican side of the aisle that just knew this was so devastating in their own districts. Like Oakland University was targeted for some cuts, and some of those had to be rolled back in order for Oakland County reps to vote for that. So the higher education budget still did drastically cut University of Michigan and Michigan State's operating allocation. And the justification given was that the House Republicans want those universities to use their endowments. Now, unfortunately, it sounds like a lot of Republicans don't know how endowments work, where the endowed fund, the capital in that fund is not to be spent, only the interest. And there are so many different little endowed funds with specific purposes that you can't just say, just use your endowment. It doesn't work that way. So it's not really possible for this to work the way that the Michigan House Republicans were demanding. This is also, you know, taking money, trying to give it to scholarships for everybody, regardless of income. That actually didn't happen either. And then with the K-12 education budget, we saw that the Michigan House Republicans cut a bunch of dedicated secured funding streams for really crucial programs like school meals, rural transportation calculations, some mental health services. These really crucial programs for K-12 schools were cut. And basically, the House Republicans are trying to give each school a fund to use how they want to support, whether they want to support any of these things. But really, it's going to harm rural schools the most, which is so ironic considering that so many of our Michigan House Republicans have really rural districts that are going to be harmed by this. So it is disappointing to see how this played out. But, you know, up on Mackinac, the Speaker of the House actually rolled out 3 items in a press conference. I actually watched the press conference on the porch of the Grand with a rocking chair and a glass of Prosecco, just watching to see what kind of idiotic things they would propose. And it turns out he struck out on all 3 things that they proposed. The speaker said we'd have a $12,000 per pupil K-12. Well, they don't. They still have only $10,000. He said that they would put $1 billion in the rainy day fund for schools. Well, they actually ended up cutting $300 million. And he said that they would have a scholarship for anybody in the state graduating from high school and going to a Michigan college or university, regardless of income. And actually, they retained our scholarship structure from last term that Representative Steckeloff really pushed for. So, you know, 3 strikes and you're out, man.
That is unreal. Matt Hall alone is unreal. But do you think with everything that you just talked about, with the higher education budgets, with the K-12 budgets, with the gutting of free school meals, for example, and all the other examples that you gave, including what the Detroit Free Press reported last week, that it appears that House Republicans are trying to shift some like $40 million to private schools, even though, you know, that's against our state constitution. But that's the overall goal here, right, is to switch money from public to private schools, even though we do have a ban
obviously
on that.
I feel like, you know, Pat, that the biggest donor to the Michigan House Republican caucus as a whole and to individual members is the DeVos family.
Right.
You know, it's time for the caucus to pay back the DeVos family for helping them get majority. And, you know, the Michigan House Republicans are just trying to do what their sugar daddy DeVosses are telling them to do so that the DeVos family can make money off the backs of our kids. And it's wrong.
Well, what do Michiganders have to look forward here? Because obviously we've got the Democratic majority in the Senate that will fight back against what the Republican House passed. And of course, we have Democratic Governor Whitmer, who won't go with a lot of what the Republicans passed that you just described. And we haven't even really touched on what's happening with the general budget and that entire debate. Do you think House Republicans really want to get something done, or do you foresee that they really want to maybe shut down the government?
You know, trying to put myself in the mind of Republicans in the Michigan House is like a little bit of a scary place. I don't really want to try to go. But I will say that in March, when the Republicans in the Michigan House passed their first budget, which cut $5 billion from school aid and cut 92% of the rest of state government, I thought, wow, they're really showing their hand here. They really do not care about crucial services that Michiganders depend on. And I was shocked that they even put it in black and white in a bill and they all voted for it. I was actually shocked. And I have been yelling it from the rooftops. You know, everybody's really worried about the big, beautiful bill in DC that's proposing to cut hundreds of billions in Medicaid from the federal side that will impact us here in the state. Well, friends, the Michigan House Republicans voted to cut every single dollar from the Department of Health and Human Services budget. That means every single Medicaid dollar in Michigan. Almost half of our kids are born with Medicaid paying for it here in Michigan. 3 in 5 seniors have their nursing home coverage paid for by Medicaid. And Michigan House Republicans voted to put $0 in March toward that. So I think you can see that even back in March, they were playing games, trying to push for a state government shutdown. It's really a dangerous game to play. We have a responsibility as elected officials to create a state budget and to do it on time. So it's really irresponsible and immature to shirk your duty and not actually do your job.
Well, and as you just mentioned, with congressional Republicans trying to pass their budget containing those massive cuts to Medicaid and also in Medicare while funneling billions of dollars then in tax cuts up to their elite donor base. And of course, the shenanigans that you just described happening here on the state side. Is that why you reintroduced your MyCare plan, which is a publicly funded healthcare system that you say is designed to save money and save lives? Can you talk more about MyCare and why you wanted to introduce it now?
So I ran for this office in part to push a state level Medicare for all type payment system here in Michigan. So MyCare this year, the bill is House Bill 4407, is a bill that would establish a Medicare for all type plan here in Michigan that would cover all 10 million Michiganders for necessary medical care. And it would use federal and state funding sources in order to fill up a bucket of money called the MyCare Trust Fund. And that trust fund would then pay for the services for 10 million Michiganders. And we did introduce that a few weeks ago here, and we do have a town hall coming up in Ann Arbor on Monday the 23rd, in Dexter, really. It's part of my district, on Monday the 23rd in the evening. And we're looking to do town halls across the state. So we are asking folks, if you're interested in hosting a town hall, maybe with your book club, maybe with your entire church, could be any sort of group, please invite us and we'll work on a way to get there and talk about MyCare as a Medicare for All style plan for the state of Michigan. And we're also asking groups, if you would like to sign on with a resolution of support for MyCare, we already have several local governments and political local committees signing on as supporters, passing resolutions to support MyCare in Michigan. But the most exciting thing about this year is that instead of like last term introducing this and doing town calls from, you know, Grand Rapids to Lansing to Detroit and Marquette, like we did last term, this term, I actually have reached out to the bill sponsors in 24 states who have state level Medicare for all bills. And we've been coordinating and working together. And we're also planning on working with federal partners, such as Congressman Ro Khanna and Senator Ed Markey, who are working on a state level Medicare for all approval bill that would require the federal government to approve these bills. We've also supported Congresswoman Jayapal and Senator Sanders and my own Congresswoman Debbie Dingell in their Medicare for All bill reintroduction earlier this spring. And so now all these state legislators, we're coordinating across the country, and we're really trying to help build this movement, not only in our states, but also across the country to support the transition to Medicare for All. I keep saying it's really unfortunate, and people will die based on the cuts that are coming out of the quote unquote big, beautiful bill from DC. Once our healthcare system fully collapses from these cuts, we're going to have to rebuild. And that's the time when we could rebuild and have it paid for in a different way. I've worked in health policy for a long time now, and a lot of people say you can only do Medicare for all if that's how you start. Well, unfortunately, we're probably going to have to start over again with our healthcare system here soon. Mm-hmm. So when we start over, we need to start over using Medicare for all.
You know, Representative Brian Ganz, what I like the most about your reintroduction of the state Medicare for all plan, the MyCare plan, is that you're doing something that I plead with Democrats to do more often, and that is play offense. You know, I've been talking about a long time how it seems to me for many, many years that Democrats always seem to be playing defense. And as you're well aware, right now, there's a lot of infighting and debating inside progressive, liberal, and Democratic Party circles about the future direction of the party. And while there's a lot of angst and anger over what MAGA Republicans and Trump are doing to America right now, it does seem to me like Democrats are also trying to figure out, and I think it's a good thing, trying to figure out what the future of the party should look like, what the future of the party should be. Do you think on a generalized basis, the Democratic Party leadership on a national level has done a good enough job on letting the people know, or letting the working class know, that it's hearing them? Or do you believe a new message, a new direction is needed?
I do think that nationally, Democratic Party in the United States is quite diverse and has a wide spectrum of opinions on a wide variety of topics. Now, we do have some basics that are pretty easy for us to define. You know, Democrats are for working people. We want to make sure that our society is structured in a way to support our families who are trying to make ends meet and are trying to actually live up to the American dream. That's what Democrats are for. Democrats want to make sure we have our health care that we deserve. We need to support our kids and our families with childcare. I'm a sandwich generation member right now, taking care of my father. We need to support our seniors and have elder care. So Democrats are caring. Democrats are the party of caring for one another. And we do that in part through protecting our basic rights and our basic freedoms, our freedom for our own body autonomy, especially for women and gender diverse individuals. We want to protect our rights to due process, and we want to protect our rights as the accused going through the court process. We want to ensure a robust court system so that we can have neutral decision makers decide whether or not things are constitutional. Democrats are for protecting our planet and making sure that we have it for as long as we possibly can. As long as humans are here on this planet, we should be taking care of our mother who took care of us and enabled all life. So it's really easy for us to say what we're for. We're for clean water. We're for clean air. We should be able to go outside and play with our neighbors and have safe neighborhoods with clean air and clean water and safety. Democrats are for making sure that we take care of each other, that we protect each other. It's really easy for me to declare what Democrats are for.
Well, and Representative Ryan Ganz, let me tell you, that kind of a platform and those kinds of policies, I believe, our policies and a platform that a majority of working class Americans could really, really get behind. And let me just also say that it's great to have such a strong voice such as yours in Lansing when we desperately need it at this time. Democratic State Representative Kerry Ryan Ganz from the 47th House District, thanks once again for being on Left of Lansing again this week. And well, keep up the good fight.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to chatting again another time.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Special thanks to Representative Kerry Ryan Ganz for appearing on the podcast again. It's always great hearing from her and the message and the progressive agenda and the progressive fight that Kerry Ryan Ganz advances in Lansing. And as you heard from the representative, she mentioned the Mackinac Policy Conference last month. Well, you know I'm no fan of that conference. And if I would have had a little more time, I would have asked Representative Ryan Ganz if she would think that maybe it's time for the conference to end. And also if it really serves any kind of real purpose for working Michiganders. But I was moved by her statements on being aware of her surroundings during one of those No Kings rallies that she attended last weekend after learning of the assassination of the former Minnesota State House Speaker. We are living in scary times, and we are living in some tumultuous times, not normal times. And like Jon Stewart pointed out on The Daily Show this week, we don't have to live with this kind of violence, but it's what the MAGA Republican Party insists we must do since they believe in the rights of gun manufacturers over our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Baldwin, Michigan is now in the immigration debate news. A shuttered detention facility up there is reopening for a brand new client, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Yes, ICE. ICE officials will soon use the reopened detention facility to house undocumented citizens, or who knows, some of them could be American citizens. But the North Lake Correctional Facility, which closed down in 2022, is reopening thanks to a company called Geo Group, which purchased the building for ICE. Now, Bridge Michigan reported on the story, but strangely enough, ICE nor the Geo Group were available for comment. I'll be darned. As that Bridge Michigan story reported, Geo Group has been scrutinized for unsafe conditions at facilities across the country, including at ICE detention centers in California and Colorado. Huh. Now, that is rather interesting, I think, maybe something that should be scrutinized even further. The ACLU of Michigan tweeted that GEO facilities also have repeated practices of denying detained immigrants access to attorneys. Medical neglect and poor conditions, the ACLU of Michigan says, are common in detention centers like North Lake, including the lack of clean facilities, limited food supplies, and physical and sexual abuse. And we want that here in Michigan. This GEO group, by the way, signed a $1 billion contract with the regime in its mass deportation efforts. Now, I've seen some Michigan Republicans hail this as a great move at making Americans safe and also as a job creator for Northern Michigan. But who will be placed at this facility, and will due process for those who are detained be followed? And how will we know exactly what's happening in these facilities? I mean, this is Michigan. Do we want to celebrate a corporation that's got a history of unsafe conditions and unlawful activities inside the state? Even more, I get the so-called allure of jobs, but this facility opens and closes, leaving many people there in a bind. Yet these same Michigan Republicans who are hailing this facility as making America great again are the same ones who are gutting funding for the Medicaid of thousands of people in that northern Michigan county. If they really cared for these working-class Michiganders, they would ensure the people there had a stable floor underneath them instead of making them suffer, as the facility has a history of opening, closing, and opening, closing again. This is a for-profit venture. Someone's making out big, and well, I guess it pays to bow down the dear leader. But as we're seeing across the country with the masked ICE Gestapo, we don't need that kind of fascism here in Michigan.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks once again to State Representative Kerry Ryan Gans for being on the show. Hey, don't forget to check out The Left of Lansing YouTube page, and that's where you're going to find yours truly providing some video shorts, and that's commentary you're not getting on the podcast. But of course, you can get everything else that you get from the pod also on YouTube. So please subscribe there if you can. Thanks to our dear friend Kirsten for creating one of the greatest of the greats of logos. I am forever in your debt, my dear friend. And I think I read that Yuengling beer will make it out here to Michigan by August. Wow. Now, look, I love my Michigan craft beers, as you know, but forgive me if I once in a while buy a six-pack or two of Yuengling beer. I mean, what can I say? Michigan's my home, but Pennsylvania's kind of my second home, and hey, good beer is good beer. Now, if Iron City could make it out here, I'd be golden. Have a safe and cool weekend, everyone. Please hydrate as much as possible and enjoy it, because summer is officially here. But as we Michiganders know, it doesn't stay for long. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.